I'm Reverend Lisa Day, minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Welcome to our weekly radio program, where you'll hear a segment from one of our recent services recorded at our church on beautiful Troop Square. We invite you to join us Sundays at 11 a.m. in person or via live stream on Zoom. You can find the Zoom link and more about Unitarian Universalism in Savannah at our website, uusavannah.org. We hope you enjoy today's program.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning. I'm Gigi Kelly Regalizio, and I'll be serving as your worship associate this morning. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Our minister, Reverend Lisa Day, will be our worship leader this morning. Luke Higgins will bring our Love at the Center moment, and our worship, religious, education, and covenant group theme for March is Paying Attention. Here at the UU Church of Savannah, we are working to build a diverse, multicultural, and beloved community. We celebrate the presence and participation of people of all races, genders, sexual orientations, abilities, and ethnic and national origins. We warmly welcome you on YouTube and on site, whoever you know yourself to be and wherever you are on your journey. With the lighting of our chalice, symbol of our Unitarian Universalist faith, we enter into sacred time. With this chalice, may we kindle the flame of our attention, not too fiery or wild, spreading without cause or care, not too dim or fading, unfocused and ineffective, but like a cheerful cook fire in a cozy hearth, like a comforting candle, flickering yet steady. May our attention be befriended, directed, and sustained for the betterment of all humankind. By Laura Stevens.
Come. Awaken your senses to this moment where we practice the revolutionary act of noticing. The breath that sustains us, the beauty hiding in ordinary homes, the beauty hiding in ordinary hours, the small things that keep hope alive. Come, let us train our attention on that which leads us home. Let us worship together.
I've been looking forward to having my moment in the spotlight, the love in the center spotlight. I had something written down, which I left on my printer this morning, but I do better this way anyhow. Let's tell ourselves that. So I want to start with a quote by one of my favorite poets, Rainer Maria Rilke. The highest form of love is the protection of another's solitude. It's a counterintuitive way of defining the word love. We think of love as closeness, connection, knowing someone. And I want to suggest to you that the form of solitude that I'm talking about here is not a lack of intimacy. In fact, it's the soil, the fertile soil that feeds real intimacy and real closeness. And why, might you ask this? Because each human soul is a bottomless mystery. We hardly know the depths of our own hearts, let alone the hearts of those close to us and in our community. And when we honor one another's solitude, we honor the deep mystery of everything we don't know about another person's heart. Their love, their creativity, their pain, their trauma, their beauty, forms of beauty, maybe that they've never shown another soul. We open up a space where they can live into the depth of that mystery, the depth of that dark, that small, that call that pulls us towards real love, real interdependence. Interdependence that doesn't where we don't project our love or tell another a person who they should be, but we allow them to emerge the full self that they are. And I want you to think about what that means in our world, what that means as parents to respect, to protect the solitude of our children. That's a hard one. And to protect the solitude of each other in this congregation. I think that's important right now. Thank you.
Let us enter into a spirit of meditation. The words of meditation this morning are from M. Jade Kaiser. Any God worth praying to, any divine worth honoring, anything that can remotely call itself sacred while children are bombed, hungry, and afraid, anything worth its dirt in devotion is already letting out a primal scream, is already furious and fuming and has been for years, is already placing their body, their livelihood, their anything and everything on the line. Desperate with love, desperate with grief, desperate with rage, while too many sanctuaries are filled only with silence. Too many choirs sing of everything but freedom. Too many prayers for peace aim to transcend as blood seeps further into the dirt. Come, 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 let us worship at the feet of our children. 10 small toes, 10 holy pleas for humanity. To little else can I bow. Our first reading this morning, part of an essay by Kathleen Fisher, Attention is the Beginning of Devotion. The line wound through a small lobby of Boston's Museum of Fine Arts, inching toward the table where a slight woman sat signing books of poetry. She smiled and acknowledged each person proffering a volume, her newest or one of their favorites. Though embarrassed at being a little starstruck, I too joined the line of admirers, clutching my own dog-eared collection of her earlier poems, a page open for her autograph. Amid the friendly din of the room, I could hear the odd word, admiring and appreciative, from readers and fans telling her what their poems meant to them. The woman in line ahead of me appeared to have come to the reading alone that October night. She looked serious and self-contained, elsewhere perhaps in her thoughts. I remember her as slightly hunched over, unremarkable in her dress and demeanor, easily overlooked. She spoke to no one. When she looked up and noticed that the line had moved, she shuffled forward and then returned her gaze to the floor, the body advancing and the mind retreating with every few steps. When her turn came, she stepped up to the table and bent forward to say something to the poet, who was barely visible among the stacks of books. And then the poet put down her pen and leaned forward, taking the woman's hands, looking intently as she spoke. I stepped back, fearing I might overhear or intrude on this private moment. The woman spoke, and the poet listened for what seemed a long time compared to the usual exchange over an autograph. As she moved away from the table, the woman appeared lighter, softer, as if a burden had been lifted. I have no idea what passed between them, but it was clear that the woman had been heard. It was a moment of exquisite, unforgettable kindness. I was so absorbed by their encounter that I cannot remember what happened when the poet turned to me. I imagine that I stammered earnest gratitude as I presented my book. I know that she smiled, then signed her name beneath the poem I had chosen. For now, every time I read The Summer Day, I see in a beautiful script in fine point blue ink, Mary Oliver. When I recall her kindness to the woman ahead of me in line, I hear the closing words of her essay, Upstream. Attention is the beginning of devotion. And now from the poet Mary Oliver, Sometimes. Something came up out of the dark. It wasn't anything I had ever seen before. It wasn't an animal or a flower, unless it was both. Something came up out of the water, a head the size of a cat, but muddy and without ears. I don't know what God is. I don't know what death is. But I believe they have between them some fervent and necessary arrangement. Sometimes melancholy leaves me breathless. Later, I was in a field full of sunflowers. I was feeling the head of midsummer. I was thinking of the sweet electric drowse of creation when it began to break. In the west, clouds gathered, thunderheads. In an hour, the sky was filled with them. In an hour, the sky was filled with the sweetness of rain and the blast of lightning, followed by the deep bells of thunder. Water from the heavens. Electricity from the source. Both of them mad to create something. The lightning brighter than any flower. The thunder without a drowsy bone in its body. Instructions for living a life. Pay attention, be astonished, tell about it. Two or three times in my life I discovered love. Each time it seemed to solve everything. Each time it solved a great many things, but not everything. Yet left me as grateful as if it had indeed and thoroughly solved everything. God, rest in my heart and fortify me. Take away my hunger for answers. Let the hours play upon my body like the hands of my beloved. Let the cat head appear again, the smallest of your mysteries, some wild cousin of my own blood, probably, some cousin of my own wild blood, probably, in the dark dinner bowl of the pond. Death waits for me. I know it. Around one corner or another, this doesn't amuse me, neither does it frighten me. After the rain, I went back into the field of sunflowers. It was cool, and I was anything but drowsy. I walked slowly and listened to the crazy roots in the drenched earth laughing and growing. Here end the readings. The emperor has no clothes, or in the version we heard this morning, but he hasn't got anything on. On one level, the point of this wisdom story, this tale of master storyteller Hans Christian Andersen, is obvious. The child doesn't so much see what no one else can see, the child says what no one else dares say. It's a story about truth-telling. But William James, an American philosopher and psychologist whose life spanned from the mid-19th century through the early 20th century, wrote, "My experience is what I agree to attend to. Only those items which I notice shape my mind." And so, at another level, the emperor's new clothes is about becoming what we attend to. The townsfolks and the courtiers agreed tacitly to pay attention to lies, and so became liars. In this country, at this moment in history, thousands of people have become liars by agreeing to pay attention to lies. That's why one of the catchphrases, one of the mantras of the current phase of the resistance is, eyes, not lies, a call to witness, document, record, and preserve the actions of ICE and other federal and sometimes state and local agents. When we are told lies with grinding, mind-numbing frequency, it takes discipline and deliberate self-awareness to refuse to agree to pay attention to those lies, to resist believing, repeating those lies, to avoid becoming complicit as liars ourselves. Trekkies among you, I'm thinking of Chain of Command Part 2. For those of you who are less familiar with Star Trek, in this episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, Captain Picard is taken captive and tortured. His captor again and again and again asks him how many bright lights he sees. There are four bright lights, as the viewer can see, and each time Picard is asked, that is his answer, four. But the captor insists there are five lights, and the torture continues as Picard refuses to become complicit in the lie. Just before he is rescued, Picard declares for one final triumphant time, there are four lights. But later, safely back on the Enterprise, he admits that at the end he saw, or at least was prepared to say he saw, five lights to make the pain stop. When we agree as a country to pay attention to lies or to refuse to pay attention to truth, we reshape our national character. In refusing over decades, scores of decades, to attend to women's accounts of our experiences of violence and sexual harassment and assault, we become a country wherein it was possible for Larry Nassar to continue to serve as physician to U.S. gymnastics, continue assaulting young women for decades after the first reports of his behavior were made to authorities. That same refusal allowed Brett Kavanaugh to be confirmed as a Supreme Court justice. Likewise, agreeing to turn our attention elsewhere, such as toward the lie about women being hysterical or the lie that might makes right, has made possible a great deal of sound and fury over the Epstein files, but almost no one toppling from their seat of power, much less held legally accountable for their crimes. In this country, at least. Agreeing more or less collectively to attend to the lie that undocumented people are both lazy and therefore a drain on the social welfare system and taking jobs away from U.S. citizens, and the lie that undocumented people are disproportionately responsible for violent crime, and the lie that undocumented people vote, agreeing to attend to all these lies shapes us into a nation that allows what has been happening in Minneapolis and greater Minnesota this winter, what happened in Chicago last winter, what has happened to a lesser degree in many cities. Though, it also must be said, agreeing to attend to the reality that no one is illegal, the reality that undocumented people neither vote nor qualify for social welfare assistance, and evidence of fraud in those areas is almost non-existent. The reality that immigrants have enriched, no, built, our society from before we were a nation. Attending to these realities shapes us into a nation, shapes us into a nation that allows what has also been happening in Minneapolis and other places around the country, including Savannah. The community care, the trained and fiercely diligent observers, the mutual aid, the marches, and the singing. That in some way and to some degree we become what we attend to isn't a phenomenon limited to what we might call politics, though I'd call what I've just described not politics, but rather life in the United States in 2026. That we become what we agree to attend to is also true in many, if not all, areas of our life. There is a story I once read and have never been able to find again, so this is my memory of that story, about a novice monk who confessed to his teacher that he was struggling to meditate because he was missing his baby bull back at home. The teacher instructed the novice to return to his cell and to meditate on his beloved bull. When the novice didn't return for his next couple meetings with his teacher, the teacher looked for him and discovered him sitting outside his cell with a blissful smile on his face. He apologized for missing his sessions, explaining that he couldn't get his horns through the doorway. What we agree to attend to shapes us. I don't know if Mary Oliver became more like the old woman she listened to so closely that evening, described in our first reading, but I'm confident that Kathleen Fisher became more like Mary Oliver for having attended so closely to that interaction, rather than to her own impatience to have her moment with the great poet, receive the autograph, and get home to bed, perhaps. So it is with us as individuals, not just as a society. When we spend 10, 15, 20 minutes negotiating Abercorn, White Bluff, Mall Boulevard, we have a choice. We can attend to the frustrating, frenetic morass surrounding us. And lose a few pages of our manuscript. Like all the rest of it. Or we can attend to an image, the face of a beloved perhaps, and become calm. When we go to Tybee, we can attend to the waves and the sun and the wind, and feel ourselves becoming the peace of the beach. Or we can attend to the loop going through our mind. Airstrikes on Iran, Epstein files, a family's health concern, a job loss, and thus feel our heartbeat race and our breath become more shallow. What we agree to attend to shapes us. As a congregation, no less than as individuals or a country, our shape, our spirit, our future depends on what we agree to attend to, which isn't to say we get to ignore anything that truly needs our attention. We can attend primarily to disagreements, distrust, confusion, and a sense of betrayal some of us have felt arising from the board's decision last fall to remove someone from our membership, thus taking on a congregational shape of doubt and a spirit of uncertainty. We can attend primarily to the relief and gratitude and pride others of us have felt arising from that same decision, thus taking on a congregational shape of reconciliation and spirit of faith. Or we can attend primarily to the reasons we first walked through these doors or tuned into YouTube months, years, or decades ago. We can attend primarily to the visitors who almost every Sunday walk into this service seeking. Another page missing. Oh, there we go, printed on both sides. Seeking the things we were seeking then. We can attend to the energy of our rebuilt choir, to the friendships that exist among us, new and long-standing, to the good work of our social action ministries, to the beauty of our Love at the Center offerings, to the joy of seeing our young people gather in the front pew, delighted to be with their friends, delighted to be in this room. All of this thus shifting us into a congregational shape of deep commitment and spirit of possibility. We can agree over coming weeks and months to attend to practices and attitudes that spark creativity, call forth generosity, foster community, and encourage spiritual exploration, thus taking on a congregational shape of openness and spirit of generativity. And so one day, in the not-so-distant future, we might each be seen, like the novice monk, with a blissful smile upon our face and our whole being shaped in the likeness of this beloved community. We can likewise take up our part in shifting our nation's attention toward truth and compassion and justice. For example, showing up next Saturday right here to sing the resistance, preparing ourselves to bring a song to the No Kings rally next month. And we can keep doing it until, through our collective attention to truth and compassion and justice, we've reshaped our society into the embodiment of compassion and justice. And we can do the same in our personal lives, choosing carefully what we agree to attend to, that it might never or seldom be said of us, "But they've got nothing on." So may it be. Amen.
This is Reverend Lisa Day. I hope you've enjoyed this program from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Please join us at one of our services sometime soon at our church on Troop Square or live on Zoom. We're the beacon of liberal religion in Savannah, and you can find out more at uusavannah.org. We meet on Sundays at 11 a.m. Thanks for listening.